Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Decorating Pages is a podcast dedicated to taking you behind the scenes of the designs of your favorite TV shows and films. Each episode, I'll be sharing design stories from some of Hollywood's most famous sets, interviews from set decorators, production designers, directors, and actors about creating the look of TV and film, about their design inspirations, and stories that take sets from page to screen. Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of Decorating Pages. I'm Kim Wanup. Joining me is the production designer and art director of The Good Place, Ian Phillips and Adam Rao. We go set by set of episode 310, called Janet's, of season 3 of The Good Place. I thought it would be interesting for you to hear the collaboration that goes on into the sets and how we work through them to get them ready for camera. We are also submitting this episode for the Emmys, so fingers crossed. Please take a look at the blog post on decoratingpagespodcast.com for this episode to see the sets we are describing and to follow along. I hope you enjoy. Hi, guys.
Hi, Kim.
What's up, Kim?
Hey. So we're going to run through episode 10 of season 3 of The Good Place because we're submitting it for Emmys.
Yay. That's right.
Yes. And we thought it would be interesting just to go through set by set and talk a little bit about what each of us did and the rest of our department. So it's called Janet's, and it's called that because there's so many Janets, and Janet is in a void, which is just one big white infinite space. And how did we get that? Like, that's, but that's real. It's a real set. It's not like we have infinite space.
Yeah, it's a physically built set. It's one giant white room without any corners, which makes you dizzy, honestly, when you stand in the middle of it, because there's no point of reference. So it's kind of fun to just stand in the middle, and then when you actually get furniture in there, it does sort of turn it into a little bit of a space.
Also, that's Ian Phillips, who's the production designer, and also here is Adam Rao, the art director.
I think it's important to note that we were at the intersection of Janet's essence and infinite knowledge, something like that. It's described as a place that could be anything, so when you read It Could Be Anything, it's up to the three of us to try and make it be something that humans can understand.
Determine what that actually is.
And then reel it in.
Yeah.
Reel it into what we could actually get, produce, and... make into reality for them to shoot 3 days later, 5 days later. So
I think it was closer to three.
Yeah. Paint has a big job in this. Because
yes, they do.
People have to walk around in booties. People have to not make any marks because it'll show up.
And that's right. They drag around cardboard to protect the floor and put booties on people and...
And there's also a massive light rig up above. Obviously, the audience doesn't ever see that, but there's basically a light wall of panels all the way, you know, surrounding the entire space to make the walls light up so you can get the infinite look that it gives. We also had to extend the set quite a bit. It previously was kind of a corner, and then we extended it to be three walls and then almost completed. There was basically 30 feet or 20 some feet left so
space.
That you could get inside and not do a reverse. But because you had so many characters and such challenging makeup, hair changeovers, we had to, you know, make it as streamlined as possible by giving them as much white infinite void as we could allow.
Right, because every time that these scenes are shot for every different Janet, that is placed inside of the void. That's a separate camera scene. So they have to film each Janet separately and then composite them all together in post.
Yeah, so there's literally sticks as eyelines that the actors were using to be able to make sure that they're looking correctly in the right spots when one Janet is playing another. They had physical people there also, but I think they used the sticks a lot.
They're standing. It's sticks with little ping pong balls on the top. It's important to note that there is a fourth person as part of this team in this particular set for sure, is our visual effect captain, David Neednoggle, who's incredible, and he wiped out a lot of our sticks that held up our scenery, because at one point they are in a void with nothing, and then they bloop into several different sets.
He's wiping a lot.
He is wiping a lot.
He's definitely using his eraser tool on the computer.
Because there's no cords. I mean, he got rid of the painting is actually on a jack, which was painted white, but he still wiped the jack so that it just looks like it's hanging there. The furniture selection, I think we just wanted something comfortable and something not too character-like for any of them. It was sort of like modern, but had some style, but nothing too directly influenced by any character.
Yeah, that's correct, because Janet doesn't really have a place to live. This is all inside of her head, so to speak. So I think that when you and I had talked about it, we didn't want anything super specific. We just wanted stuff that was comfortable, but also stuff that, furniture that would stand out against the white. So, choosing the colors was important to having the set look good.
Oh, look, everyone.
Oh, look, it's
David Hyman.
Look at this.
Come on in.
Oh, sorry. We're looking at pictures if you want to look at pictures.
Okay, I'll be down there in a few minutes.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, the void was the void. It was complex, and believe it or not, even though it was a white room, it took a lot of effort to get it to look the way that it did.
Yeah.
Is this a shameless plug for Living Spaces?
Yeah. No, this is a shameless plug for Bridge Props, okay. Who basically did the whole set from, including the artwork. That's our void that we did. A complete opposite from our void, the next set was the accounting office, where they go to, which I think is in the, I don't know if it's in the middle place or if it's its own place.
It's its own place.
It's its own world.
Yeah.
And this was fun. This is a location that had 97 cubicles.
Yes, that is correct.
Some of them torn apart and we had to rebuild. But for me, it was a lot of getting duplicates. And we decided in our meetings that every person would have exactly the same thing in their cubicle and being very minimal. So everyone had the same paperwork in their cubicle. Everyone had one pencil. Everyone had the same, CRT computer screens and...
All the memos were the same.
Yeah,
everybody
and one special
the personality.
Postcard.
There was one postcard that everybody got.
That's our graphics genius helped create Graham Radcliffe. It's basically a beach.
It's a beach and it just says greetings from, so it's super nondescript, just like everything else in this place.
And we had the same lamps. I had to purchase 97 matching lamps, and go through every single cubicle, and every single paper was in the exact same place, hopefully, through all the scenes. And then our special effects did set extensions, which you can see in that back left, that it's extended into infinity.
Yeah, visually, in real life, that where that door is on the kind of far left, it was a wall there, and then they just continued. I think too there was the amount of computer monitors also dictated how many cubicles could be dressed because they could only get so many of those screens.
It was like that, but there was 97 there.
Mm. It was just which ones were working.
Which ones would work.
Yeah.
So some of them were fake, and then their back was to whatever the scene was. But all the working ones, obviously, they're up and they're working. But yeah, there were some that were just dummies that we faced towards the back because we couldn't it's hard to find all of those.
That, and like
actually work, yeah.
And this, I mean, it was silly, but it took work to figure out where you choreographed which person where, because even though you can't see it in the particular image we're looking at, they all had individual name tags and individual tasks assigned to that name tag.
Yeah.
So as they were getting a tour of this facility, we figured out where each character would be for accounting sex acts and accounting lunchtime. I don't remember a lot of the
things.
There
was a lot.
But 90 some of them.
Yeah, there was a lot, and they were choreographed, and we did put it in. And I think that they shot something, but the only joke I think that was in there was the sex position guy.
Yeah.
I think that's the
sex acts, yeah.
The sex acts,
yeah.
But there was a lot. There was probably, I mean, there was, at the time they filmed it, there was like 5 or 6 featured people.
Yeah. Now, this is a location that we went into, and you guys had construction still, though.
Yeah,
we covered up all the windows. I mean, in places like this, we don't want to see anything outside because it doesn't exist on Earth. But every office building that you go into even has a few windows that look outside. And, you know, we try to get rid of all of those earthly elements that exist.
We rearranged the lights so they were symmetrical and looked like an interesting grid. And we also, you know, hung all those black signs that helped, you know, the visual effects just to continue like it went on forever.
Right. It gives it some sort of point of perspective.
And order. They're accountants. They have shit in order.
You can see it better in this next picture we just switched to, which is them, the three of them standing by the old computer screen with unidentified action. Undefined, sorry.
So that was a monitor that I got, and then construction built a little house for it to make it look important and older. But yeah, you could see all the graphics that even on the pillars and...
And I'm pretty sure the P-Touch label, the old school P-Touch label that's above and below the...
Oh,
I did those, and I'm pretty sure they just say, I'm a really old computer.
Yeah. Next we went into another office of the head accountant, which, you know, is minimal. You still don't want to give them a lot of paperwork because they have these magic screens that come up for a lot of their work. But the more technology gets smaller, the less dressing I have, really. So doing these throwback scenes are usually nice because you get to use paperwork. But this was, again, minimal, and still his desk is sort of that old style, kept with the oak that we had in the other room. And then the construction, and you guys, you designed this. I always think of it as, it looks like Super Mario Brothers.
It kind of does, yeah. It's kind of what it is.
And
I think part of it was that just in designing this and in the attached cubicle room was to keep all of the colors very, very desaturated. And the only colors that you really see in this whole entire set are these pneumatic tubes that exist to transport the files and the mail back and forth, other than the character's wardrobe. So we really just tried to make it as mundane and boring as we possibly could, and then just give these little pops of color to let you know that that was something important.
The other thing too, that's I think what Ian's challenge was, is we were doing it about a year ago right now, so I'm having a hard time remembering, but the pneumatic tube was an idea the art department brought forth. There was other ideas, I just don't remember what they were. I think there were doors, and there was at one point air conditioning vents, and there was
mailboxes,
and there was mail delivery bags. There was a conveyor belt at one time, and we had a conveyor belt from a real factory book. There was a lot of development on like how can we achieve this. We were even considering raising the ceiling at one point so we could actually really see the actors get sucked up into the air. All of that was in development while we were loading in this set.
Because it's they know what they want when they see it.
a lot of times we are the ones that actually have to visualize that for them, because they have great ideas and they know what they want to see, but we also have to achieve that in 5 days.
And like, this is a good example. Go to the next picture, actually, I think. No, it's the previous one. The image that's over the accountant's head and the accountant office image is actually something that was added in later, because we made caveman art, and they were hanging, and then they changed their mind on what kind of position I think they wanted, or right. the level of blood. I don't remember what it was, but it was Og meets Rock.
Og meets
it was
Grog.
This, it was the Og first Grog and Grog like, nice Og. Gesture where he gives him the rock, and then the second one is he hits him over the head with it.
Right.
And how did
and that's human nature.
And who painted that? How did we outsource that? Right.
We did. We had an illustrator illustrate it. Who is illustrated? She's had work with us on Park and Recreation, so she illustrated it. Her name's Robin. And then we had an artist who was able to bust them out. I think in 1 day or 2 days.
Yeah.
I think the first one took longer, but then the second one went a lot faster.
Right.
And all in, I think that person did 3 of them.
And then I framed it.
Yeah.
I had a lot to do with that.
What I don't think we see in any of the other pictures, even if we scroll through, is that behind us, right in this picture here, which is with the two tubes, is a giant Lazy Susan. We
you never really never see. I tried to get a screen grab of it. You only see the binds of the books. It was a really nice, huge, like Lazy Susan of like 80 books at least that we had.
Easily, yeah.
And it was meant to appear as if the Lazy Susan went on infinitely, and as they spun it, there would be new books that would show up for.
It was supposed to spin and spin and spin, and it didn't. It only did one spin, and they pick out the Doug book,
basically.
But that was a huge construction
endeavor to get a 7-tiered basically wedding cake to spin and stop basically as you need to with all the books not falling
and
over.
The weight of the books and then the how fast it would go and the books not falling and
how
staying up
the
and,
is,
and our prop master Gabe Perillo got all of these books made and it was just sort of because they took out all the books.
They weren't all in English. We only had one row in English. We had Arabic and I can't remember the other languages, but we actually had a lot more. There's a lot going on Lazy Susan.
Yeah.
Right, because it's supposed to be from all over the world.
Yeah.
Of all times.
Of all time, yes.
So, of course, you didn't see it. So.
Yeah.
Of course, the one thing, like every
department,
every department had a lending hand in. That was, but that's it.
That's TV.
The scene after where the special effects make them go up the tube is pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it becomes a lighting gag also.
So that's a community creation. You know, our construction team built it. Our visual effects team extended the character up into the tube and our special effects made the wind. And then the lighting department, of course, lit it brighter. So it all kind of worked to make us appear like you were being sucked up in the tube, even though nobody went anywhere.
No.
But it would have been really fun if you could.
Yeah, I'd go. I'd do it.
I'd take that ride.
I'd try it. And then they come out of into a mailbox into the good place, which this is a completely different location in Pasadena.
Yeah,
I think
Pasadena.
It's a really pretty old house, and
with green carpeting.
Yeah, and you guys built that huge mailbox for everyone to come out of.
Yes.
So that was a build for us, and then it goes.
And then we blew it up.
And then we blew it up. Yeah, and then into the room, which is this round sitting room that they had, and I just we decorated with tons of old mail stamps and old weighing little weights that you would do your mail with and. All these little tags of where mail was going and when, and I had so many other mail bags full of mail, as if no one's getting their mail.
Exactly.
I don't know because it
all goes to the good place, and, no spoilers. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think the thing to point out for everyone who doesn't understand is that when you read on a script the mailroom of heaven, essentially is what it is, the team, that could be anything, and we were able to find something that got put together in a room that makes everybody see the same thing and make sense.
But we're picking a time there. Nothing's modern in that room, and it's sort of old school and analog. It's basically a lot of...
And I think that's true with the whole entire show.
Yeah.
There's not... We try not to rely on modern technology, and of course during this season they were on Earth a lot, so we were able to use modern technology. That was the only time that we've ever used modern technology. everything that exists in the good place, the bad place, the medium place, it's all older technology. Everything is very sort of out of date, and whether that's a statement that we don't need as much technology as we have, or whether it's a statement just to get rid of all the technology, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's nice that we jump around.
Yeah, I think you guys point out really that season three was really exciting for anybody to just work on, I think, but also to watch because it went through such a giant range of different things in one season. We were constantly on our feet as an art department. You were constantly inventing different ways to dress. We were in Budapest. We were in Australia. We were in heaven. We were in the intergalactic.
So much signage. Yeah. So we had a really big array of freedom, but it was fun to do it all.
And I think too in places like this location in particular, because it is a historic house, there's certain restrictions and a lot of places you can, you know, if you build a set, you can blow it up. But when you go into somebody's house, as it turns out, they don't want you blowing things up. They don't want you destroying things.
They're green carpet.
Yeah.
Yes. And not only that, but when Eleanor tries to get through the door to go to the good place, and we're throwing glass or a lamp at a 150-year-old piece of stained glass, it really requires work to figure out how you're going to protect things like that and be able to do a second take and make it not look hokey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and this was the first time anyone in the show, obviously our characters, saw the actual good place. So there, it was manicuring some kind of visual statement that the good place could live in. And granted, we aren't there that much that season, but there was a fun world to look at. And this room was the first time you got to see it.
Yeah.
This shot's actually before the thing blows up. Yeah. Because after that, there was just stuff everywhere and the mail
the
was everywhere.
Was a mess.
And so, yeah. And that leads right into the next episode. When they're in, I think, they're in that Moroccan room.
Yes.
In that,
the challenge was blowing it up. I mean, fans going, paper blowing everywhere. We had seen it glitter.
Special effects, like testing
all,
glitter.
All
like,
in a room
that
was
fun.
Built on, you know, a room that was no bigger than this office, you know. It was quite tiny.
Yeah, and, you know, we ended up building two mailboxes. One that was exploded and one that wasn't exploded, just so that you can see the aftermath. And it happened so quickly in cuts, you think that it's actually exploding, but we have to build all of those different elements in order to create that one shot.
Yeah. And that's actually a plug. That's like,
yes.
There's a whole other room behind there.
Yes.
Because they're all tumbling out of that.
And the crew's going around the other side. But I remember being there for the explosion. And the first one, they were worried about the room, so it was a little light.
Yes.
If you guys remember, it was a little bit more of a poof.
And then they went for it.
And then they amped it up a little bit.
Well, guys, thanks. I'm glad we went through this.
Me too.
Yeah, that was fun.
Reminisce of our episode. So, yes, episode 10 of season 3 for The Good Place. Thanks, guys.
Go Good Place!
Yay! That was kind of fun to describe how the sets come together. Let me know if you're into this. I'm thinking of doing more of the follow-along with an episode for other designers and decorators for the shows that they decorate and design. In fact, I've really enjoyed all the emails and questions about the different sets and shows that I've been on, so keep them coming. Thank you so much. And if you like this podcast, give it a review on iTunes. I would love to hear some feedback. Thank you for joining me. I hope you got an earful. I'm Kim Wanup for Decorating Pages. Decorating Pages is sponsored by Stogie Floaty, luxury pool floats. Float them if you got them. Visit stogiefloaty.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.